Hey, everybody. How you doing? This is Adam. And man, I'm super excited about what we're going to do today. Today, we're going to begin probably once a week, maybe every other week, having a long discussion with someone from our church, Boulder Creek Community Church. And it is just a way to get to know some of the folks better in a longer discussion, just about their life story, and most importantly, about their journey of faith. So today we're going to kick it off with the person that is just a legend locally. In fact, my very first Sunday when I came back in January, I had at least four people say, I have to meet this person. And when I tell you what's next, I'll probably give it away who it is. But she had half a dozen eggs there in her hand, and she handed me a half a dozen eggs on the very first Sunday, the very first time I met her. Her name is Wilma, and I hope you enjoy this discussion and getting to know her better. God bless you guys.
For the very first one, we have the famous Wilma. And I'll never forget the first Sunday I came to speak at Boulder Creek Community Church. And, you know, there was three candidates. I wasn't even sure where I was going to end up, but I had at least four or five people say, have you met Wilma? Have you met Wilma? Everybody said, you got to meet Wilma. She's an amazing woman. And then you came up to me and you handed me, you handed me a half a dozen eggs. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
So
what I remember was it was a dozen, but if you remember half a dozen, I'll go with that.
I remember a smaller thing, but I think
later on you gave me a full dozen. Yeah.
It was the first time we'd met.
Yeah.
And you gave me eggs, and that's probably my favorite food, because you can have it so many different ways.
Yeah.
So
good.
So Wilma, you grew up in the Central Valley, Merced area.
That's right.
And what was that like living out there in the Central Valley? What kind of home did you grow up in? Tell me a little bit just about growing up in church as well.
Okay. My home was, my dad had it built. So it was brand new when, and I was about 5 years old when we moved in. And what I remember, probably the first thing that comes to my mind is he had some dirt delivered out in the front so that he could put a lawn in. And I walked out on the porch and looked at that mound of dirt, and a king snake came crawling right out of that. Yes, scared me to death. So my dad came out and killed the snake, and life went on. It was a humble home, but it had a driveway that had a lawn in the middle and concrete on either side. So when the car drove into the garage, it just had this lawn area in the middle.
Yeah.
And I started roller skating with the little skates that you had a skate key and you attached them to your shoes.
Yes, yes.
And I would get on that driveway and I would skate into the garage, around and down the other side. And I don't know, as a little kid, I did that for a while. And then when I got to high school, they had a little skating rink in our town, and I was skating there.
So
enjoyed that. So
What era are we talking about here?
We're talking about 1930, probably about 1940. I was probably about 5 years old when we moved in there. So yeah.
Wow.
So
A small town back then, probably a lot of farmers.
It was. As a matter of fact, I lived in part of the farming area, but I was just outside of town.
Okay.
So it developed more and more as I grew older, and then now it's not even the same. Yeah.
When did you leave the Central Valley and come over to the Santa Cruz County?
After I married my husband, he was into the military, got out, did the GI Bill, and he had been in college before he went in. So he just came back, finished college. His first teaching was at Watsonville High School.
Oh, really?
And so we moved over there. I think it was like 1960, probably about 1969.
Okay. Okay.
Right in there, 1967. And we lived out in the country, and I discovered poison oak there. My son had come home from school with a ball that belonged to another kid, and I said, and he was playing with it on the way home, and it bounced into the bushes. So he told me about it. I said, well, you got to return it, so we're going to have to go find it. So we did. We found it. Okay. Within a day or so, I couldn't see. My eyes were completely, I was so swollen. I had no vision at all. And so poison oak has been I respect it. I don't touch it. I don't do anything with poison oak.
Let's go back to Merced for a minute. You you grew up in church. Tell me a little bit about your spiritual journey as a kid and until you got married.
Okay. My daddy was the Sunday school superintendent at the Little Baptist Church. It was the first Baptist church in our little town.
Not the second, not the third, but the first.
It was the first.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I was in Sunday school every Sunday. I was in church every Sunday evening. I was in church every Wednesday night. And as I got older and began to attend the youth group, I did that as well. I don't know, there was some kind of a conflict that was going on at the church, and the pastor's wife were asked to leave. They were very good friends of my parents. And when they left, my parents left as well. And for a while,
this is new to me, problems in a church. I've never heard that before.
Oh, no, I know. I don't to this day, know what was happening there. But anyway, went to a Presbyterian church. My parents, I don't remember if they attended on any regularity.
Wilma? Yeah. Hold on one sec. My son is weed whacking, and I got to ask him to wait for a few minutes, okay?
Okay.
Otherwise, it's going to just come on the recording.
Okay.
Johnny, hey Johnny, hey, up here, hey, can you wait a few minutes, because I'm recording something. I'll let you know when I'm done, okay? I'm sorry. Thank you.
Sorry about that.
No problem here.
He has earphones in, listening to music. He's weed whacking, but I was able to get his attention. So
I am impressed. I know Johnny. I met Johnny here. So
He loves folks from the older generations. I don't know what it is, but he just is drawn to them. He loves to talk. And so, he's a good kid.
Well, I'm proud of him if he's weed whacking for you. That's kind of unusual these days.
Well, I have to pay him, so, allowance.
Okay, so let's see. At the Presbyterian Church, I was in the fifth grade Sunday school class, and my parents were dropping me off now. I don't think they were attending, but they were dropping me off, and had this wonderful teacher who loved me. I really felt very excited about going to her class. I think probably every kid in her class knew that she loved them.
Yeah.
And I feel like she was probably at my age when I was, able to assimilate what was happening in the Christian world.
Yeah.
And I was drawn to it. She was probably the first person that really made me feel like I want what she's got.
Wow.
But because my parents weren't comfortable in that church, it was kind of an elitist church. And
Frozen Chosen, they call the Presbyterians.
I think that fit the church really well. Anyway, they decided to go to the first Christian church in our town, which was a little small church. And wonderful, lovely people. I was probably at this point now about 10 or 11 years old when we were there. I remember helping in their vacation Bible school and working with children. I love kids. So that was kind of a neat deal. And then I was participating in their youth group and was invited to the home of one of the gals in the group that was way out in Le Grand. It was 19 miles away.
Okay.
They had a ranch. We swam in a pond, had a barbecue. It was a fun day, very fun day. At the end of the day, at right as the sun was going down, kind of dusk time, pastor that was there with us invited all of the young people to kind of journey out to this area where it was kind of a dry creek bed. And we just, there was nothing to sit on. We're all standing, but he shared the gospel, and my heart was ready. I was convicted. I needed the Lord. I needed to be saved.
Yeah.
I felt my sinfulness, and he gave an invitation. In those days, invitations were common, and you were invited to come before the pastor. So I did. I did. And I was sincere from the bottom of my heart.
Yeah. And I wanted Jesus
to save me. I was, I'm guessing around 12, maybe about 12 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. It's been a long time ago.
I can imagine you were quite a sinner by 12 years old.
By 12 years old, I felt like I was carrying the weight of my sin. It was the heaviest burden in that moment. Just in that moment. I hadn't felt it before. Yeah. But in that moment, I felt like I just had this weight on me. Yeah. And anyway, when I gave my heart to the Lord and I asked him to save me, it was like I was free. Yeah. It was in that moment. I don't know how other people experience, but it was freedom for me. It was wonderful. Wow. And I thought I was Cinderella.
Really?
I thought I was free from sin for the rest of my life. It was the greatest feeling. But by the next day, I realized that was not what happened.
Yeah.
I knew that I was saved, I was cleansed, but I was still a sinner.
Yeah. And,
yeah.
So you were free from the penalty of sin, certainly, but it didn't mean you didn't still struggle with sin, which is the part of every Christian's story.
Yeah.
You know, I love how you put it, though, even at age 12, you know, 12-year-old back in the 50s, I imagine, didn't have a lot of opportunities to sin in big ways, in significant ways. But we're all born sinners, and you understood that even at age 12, that you needed God's grace and God's forgiveness in your life. And What, that is the kind of testimony I hope and pray for my kids, you know, that they grasp that at such a young age. Amen. And they don't have to go off and experiment with, you know, more consequential sins and life altering. So what a beautiful story.
Yeah, what was interesting to me as I began to read scripture and grow, it was the Pharisees that Jesus had problems with.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was a Pharisee. Mm. I mean, I identified with a Pharisee. So it wasn't like the blatant sins that we would, you know, it was those kind of inward thoughts and feelings and pride and all of that stuff that really takes us down, I think, more than what's visible.
Exactly.
It's hidden stuff.
Yeah, that's really well put. Really well put. And something that we're all susceptible to in the church is those secret sins that are as blatant in God's eyes as anything else. So you moved to Watsonville. Your husband's a teacher. What's the next chapter in your story?
we participated in the first Baptist church. And I was a Sunday school teacher there. By this time now, I already had three children.
Okay.
So a firstborn son, a daughter, and another daughter.
Wow.
And I became pregnant while I was there with my fourth child. And it was great, but we were way out in the country.
Yeah.
We lived at the end of the road. There was nothing beyond us. And it was a good life. I enjoyed the country, enjoyed country living. Had a garden there, which is always fun for me. My spiritual life bottomed out. My husband, part of his job was doing a driver training program.
Oh, yeah.
And there were some complications and relationships through that program. And I went through a really difficult time. I thought my heart was broken in two. I mean, literally felt like that my heart was broken in two. But the faithfulness of the Lord and his grace and his patience with me helped me get through that. And life went on.
Wow.
And I had a beautiful son, mm-hmm. my middle son, and we continued. My husband was interested in going to school, back to school, because the computer industry was hitting us. And so he was interested in plugging into the computer field. And so we went to Colorado. He went to Colorado State University there for the summer and learned whatever you can learn in 2 months' time. Wow. About computers.
Yeah.
And when we came back, Foothill College, where he had been teaching, is building a new campus. At the new campus, they put in this amazing computer room, and it's called Deanza College, and which you're probably familiar with. And in this room, every wall had a computer component part. This computer covered the room.
Yeah.
The whole room. Wow. Came home one day and he said, "The computer said dog and cat today." It took all of that equipment to get it. And they got it to speak. It went through an evolution of change. They had reels at first that they were getting data on. Then they went to cards that they were doing data on. And then the room began to shrink in terms of the computer. And he loved teaching in that field. That was his primary field until he retired. He got 27 years there. And
by now you're in the Boulder Creek area.
We came to Boulder Creek because when he moved to Foothill, we lived just off campus.
Yeah.
And we were renting a place. It was a place that a couple had for many, many years. They had a horse barn, corrals. It was a lovely little home. And the state came in and forced them to sell because they were putting in 280.
Oh.
So, So they said to the state, "You've got to pay us, take it over. We're out of here." And we rented from the state. And then we watched 280 come in. When we moved in, there were apricot orchards out our window. We saw it all across there. And it was almost like if you think about the locust in the scripture, how it came through, and as the locust went through, they ate everything.
Yeah.
There was this line of guys with chainsaws, and they walked together, and they walked right down that field of that orchard, and they cut as they were going, and they cut the tree down. And I don't remember now if the same guy that cut it down, I don't think he cut it down. They just kept moving, cutting, and the guys came behind him and cut them into sizes for people to use in their wood burning stoves.
Yeah.
And so after they, it was amazing. I don't remember them doing it more than 1 or 2 days, and they had cleared the whole field.
Wow.
And And so with my little wagon, went out and gathered a little bit of wood to bring in. And so we participated with other people in the community, taking advantage of the wood. It was, so that was fascinating.
Wow, it's hard to imagine when you go over to San Jose now, Cupertino, that area, just 280, it's just always been there as long as I can remember.
Yeah. Right. When they were ready to, they had to put in a pipe across, and it was kind of from the property that we were on, across, all the way across 280 to the other side. I called it a pipe. It was a culvert. It was probably a 5-foot diameter culvert.
Yeah.
We were attending church in Palo Alto, and teaching the high school kids.
Okay.
And so we invited the high school kids up, and we journeyed through that culvert all the way to the other side. Some of the taller kids had to duck, but I don't remember how we positioned that in terms of teaching, but it was a fun day. It was a fun thing. They got in there, they hollered and made noise, and it echoed. And anyway, so that's a memory that I have of that. My husband just got on a bicycle, rode down the hill and onto the campus. We were that close.
Wow.
And now our fifth child is coming.
Okay.
And and we decided we're going to have this baby at home. We're going to have a home birth.
Yeah. Wow.
And it turned out, and this is my daughter, Rebecca, who is attending church with me. Yeah, so Rebecca is, they thought I had twins. They had the doc thought I had twins. And because we're having a home birth, I had to go to a guy who would do a home birth. And not many people were doing that then. It was kind of new. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't new because my mom had my sister at home, but it was new at this time.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of concern about population. So, And so here's our fifth child coming. And so I'm, my husband's the catcher, and I'm delivering. And I got to the place where I'm pushing, but she's not moving. Her head had crowned, but she was not moving. So by the third push, it's obvious she's stuck in there. And so the doc that was there on my next contraction just reached in, pushed her shoulder down, and she popped out.
Oh, wow. Wow.
9 pounds and 14 ounces.
Wow.
But I'm still alive. I made it. And wow. And she is precious, a precious.
So Rebecca's
daughter.
Your young.
Because my she's my youngest daughter.
Youngest daughter.
We had another one after we moved here to Boulder Creek. My son.
Six total.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. My goodness. Well, yeah.
I recommend six for everybody.
Don't tell my wife that. We're at five now, and no more. Oh my goodness.
Well, my husband was an only child. So when he found out I was pregnant with our sixth one, he turned around and walked out the door and down the road, and I didn't see him for a while. but he managed to adjust and he was
I did that with the third one.
Yeah, they're all precious kids. I love them dearly. They're great. They're all my brothers and sisters in Christ Jesus. That's probably our closest relationship.
Wow.
But I couldn't be more blessed.
So six kids, how many grandkids?
I have 24.
24.
Yeah.
And do most of them live fairly close?
Well, I have a son. My oldest son, firstborn, lives in Alaska.
Okay.
So I have two grandsons in Alaska. One of them left Alaska and moved to Alabama.
Oh,
and wow. So, so he's the farthest grandson from me. The rest of them are within distance for me to be able to see.
Good,
yeah.
Good.
One of them's in Oregon, and so she's a little farther away. But I had a trip planned to Alaska in April because my youngest grandson had his first baby girl, baby, and it was a girl. And I was going. It was born in March, and I was going in April to meet my newest great-granddaughter.
Wow.
And then another granddaughter, my middle daughter's second child, had her baby, her second child, a great-granddaughter. So my plan was to go to Alaska, meet that great-grandchild, on my way home, stop in Oregon, meet that great-granddaughter, and come home. But COVID came and everything went south. And I'm scheduled to go in September, so hopefully I'll be able to make it. But my great grandkids are going to be older now. They'll be 6 months old, 7 months old.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm looking forward to that.
They'll be more enjoyable at that age, probably.
Yeah. Yeah.
Doing more.
Yeah.
So,
what
were you going to say?
I was just going to say, I get these little pictures.
Okay.
On my phone.
Yeah.
It's a miracle.
It's a miracle
what these phones can do.
Not like those days when computers filled an entire room, just one computer.
Yeah.
So amazing.
Yeah.
Wilma, how old are you right now, if you don't
mind? I'm 85.
85.
Yeah.
85. So you think about how much
and growing
changed in 85 years.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Now, you have a tradition, I understand, on Wednesdays where all the kids or grandkids or grandkids and great-grandkids come to your house. It's Grandma Day or something like that.
That's right. That's right.
So is that still happening right now?
Absolutely. Awesome. It's just the hardest part of this COVID thing for me. I my job is necessary, so I went to work every day.
Yeah, yeah.
But my grandkids couldn't come.
Yeah.
They had to isolate at home.
Yeah.
And I had to isolate. I just went to work and I came home and that's all I did. And so that was probably the most difficult when Wednesday came up.
Yeah.
And we weren't able to spend time together because that's kind of the highlight of my life. Next to Jesus, they are, and they're also, their brothers and sisters, the older ones have given their hearts to the Lord. Beautiful. So that's precious for me. Yeah.
What a rich legacy you're leaving. And so beautiful to see your kids and grandkids embrace Jesus. So that's got to be just thrilling for your heart.
It is. It absolutely is.
Because now they're part of your eternal family, not just your earthly family.
That's right.
Wow.
That's right. So on our property, we have a little creek that runs through it, and on the other side of the creek we built a little footbridge going across, and we have a fire pit there and a place where I can put up a tent. And for a lot of years when they would come and stay over and stay over a couple of nights, we go down to the creek and we'd sit around the bonfire, and the older kids would tell stories, and you know, we'd share. We'd have devotional times together, and I had a tent that would hold 10 kids. So, and then we'd cook in the mornings over that fire pit.
Yeah,
eggs from the chickens.
Wow.
We'd add a little bacon on it, pancakes, and so I have these fabulous memories of times there. And then I have a treehouse that was kind of a was a dream. I would wash dishes at my sink, look up on the hill, and there's this oak tree, and I could see this treehouse in that oak tree.
Yeah.
And so I had some friends in the church that we were attending at the time that were worship leaders. They were going to be going to a conference. They left their three kids with me. And so we talked about the treehouse. And the older boy, I think he was probably 10 years old. We decided we would build the treehouse. And so I got up there with a chainsaw and I cut niches into the branches.
Yeah.
And then we made a platform on that. And so I don't know, probably 4 feet. It was just this little dinky thing, but he nailed and he worked with me. And we realized that we had to have a rail around it because we're now way up in the tree. And if anybody fell off, it's hazardous. So that was our next thing. We were going to do a rail. And his dad was kind of in construction, so thought maybe when he had a chance, he could help us with that. So anyway, parents came home and took the kids, and the treehouse was kind of left half done, part done.
Yeah.
And then my husband and I had an opportunity to go on a vacation. Now, on a farm, we didn't go on vacations very often. It's hard to get away. There are not many people that milk goats around here. And so we had this opportunity to go. And so we went for a 2-week vacation.
Wow.
And while we were gone, my middle son had a contractor come up and look at what I'd done. And he said, not safe. It is not safe. And he said, because we have so many kids, we needed to have something better than that. So my son took all of that down, cut off a branch, built a treehouse that is sizable. And when we got home, it was like shocking to see this.
Wow. He did that within two weeks.
He did that within 2 weeks.
Wow.
And when this little boy came back to the house, because we were having Bible study here at our home, I think at that time, and he noticed that his treehouse was gone. He was devastated.
Oh,
he was totally devastated. So it was a painful thing for him to see that they'd taken what he had built down and he didn't get a chance to finish it. And so that was kind of a hard place for him.
Yeah.
But I could get 10 kids up in the treehouse. So we used to sleep up there too. I had a porta potty up there. I hook on a hose and I've got a little sink up there with water and so.
How fun. I've got to come see this place of yours.
Yes.
I keep hearing people, my son's been there a couple times.
Yeah.
And I haven't yet, so.
It's fun, it's a fun farm. We call it, the name of our farm is the Birchall Belly Acres.
Birchall Belly Acres.
Right. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Very fun.
So Wilma, in the many decades you have walked with Jesus, what's your encouragement? What's your advice to the younger generations who, in some cases, for the first time with COVID-19, experiencing a real crisis in their life and maybe a crisis of faith? What would you say just to encourage, to advise the younger generations about walking with Jesus for the long haul?
I think when I was a kid, a teenager, the thought was everybody's doing it. It must be all that bad, you know? And it was marginal stuff. So I think, the devil has a way of making things look very inviting.
Mm.
And if we give ourselves time to let that mull over in our minds, the more we think about it, the more we're drawn to it.
Mm.
So I think it's important when there is a questionable something happening, I think talk to your parents about it. You know, talk to somebody about it. Don't just let it ruminate, because that's when we jump in to sin, and that's when we have regrets. So I think knowing the Word of God is important so that you can compare what's coming from the world. And there's a really very straightforward scripture that says to us that we aren't to be like the world. And in Romans, 12:1-2? We're not to be conformed to the world.
Yeah.
That we're to be different. And sometimes it's really hard to tell the difference between the world and those that call themselves Christians. We look an awful lot like the world a lot of the time. But God's, he encourages us to be light in the world. And when we look like the world, we're not light to the world. So, yeah, I think any time for a young person, and older people as well, I have to tell you, even older people, you know, when it's questionable, when you're thinking, well, it looks like it's harmless, you need to talk to somebody about it and look at, get some input, get some counsel to help you to walk. Because it's a good name is better than, what does it say, gold and silver?
Yeah.
A good name. And so guarding your name. And that's, I think, internally.
Yeah.
That's where it really counts, is how your conscience deals with life in general. And a clear conscience is the best of the best. That's what I experienced when I gave my heart to the Lord. It was like clear conscience.
Clean.
And so,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So one more question, or maybe one more, maybe two. You went through a really difficult time. You alluded to it earlier. Your heart was broken. What's your encouragement to people that are just struggling? Maybe doubts about God's goodness or God's presence, or just hardship in life, difficulties, things that they didn't plan for. What got you through it, and what will get other people through difficulties in life?
Well, God had not failed me. Mm. And so just knowing that, I had the Lord. I think there's sometimes we lock together things that are hard, are difficult, are tragedies or difficulties in our lives, and we blame God for that. And so we turn our backs on God. We decide we're not going to follow God anymore, because if God was really loving, that wouldn't have happened. But that's not true.
Yeah.
Because God didn't do that.
Yeah.
It was man that brought that pain. And I think being able to separate the hardship, looking at what's the source of the hardship. And that isn't to say that God doesn't discipline us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know he loves me. He disciplines me.
Yeah.
You know, I still go through things that I wouldn't choose, but I've chosen them because of the decisions I've made, and his discipline is to help bring me back. So I think knowing that God is faithful, I understand that whatever I go through is to grow me. It's to bring maturity into my life and to accept that that's what I need. You know, I go back, I look back on my life and I think a lot of things I wouldn't have chosen.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I'm so grateful that God did.
Yeah.
Because even though they were hard, I believe they've helped to mold me into the person that I am. Not that I'm done. He's not done with me yet. I'm still being molded. But I know that all of those points in my life were valuable in teaching me lessons I needed to know. Mm. And to help me to appreciate people that are going through the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, I've learned to appreciate people that are going through pain. Mm. I've never been in a lot of pain in my life. Everything above my right knee and to the left is just great. But just last year, I began to feel some discomfort in my knee. And I just found out a couple of weeks ago, well, probably a month or two ago, that I'm bone on bone on my right knee. And so I'm in the process of making some decisions about what am I going to do with that? And looking at the financial parts of that.
Yeah.
But I never had experience. I didn't have the compassion, perhaps. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could hear them. I didn't feel it.
Yeah, yeah.
I have a deeper understanding. I think all of those trials that I've been through in my life have been beneficial because I'm not the only one that has gone through those kinds of trials.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like Jesus went through every one of them. And most of us go through them at one time or another. So anyway,
wow.
Trust in the Lord. Trust and obey. There's no other way to be happy in Jesus. Yeah.
Right. That's right. Okay. Well, Wilma, you are such a blessing to so many people. And even in the short time I've been at Boulder Creek Community Church, you have been a blessing to me. And I just, I'm so glad you're still there. I'm so glad that God brought you to that church. And I love looking over and seeing you smile when I'm speaking. And because I look over the other way and I see some people sleeping. But no, I'm just kidding. But
no, yeah.
But it's also neat to see three generations, you, your daughter, and your granddaughter in church together. And that's it's a beautiful thing to behold. So.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for just being you. Thank you for your faithfulness to God and being a blessing to so many people.
Well, I'm blessed. I'm blessed to be a part of that. That's my family. Mm. You're part of my family. I love hearing the truth that comes out of your mouth. And so if I'm smiling, it's because in my heart, I'm saying, go, Pastor, go. This is good. This is good. All right. I love you.
In your prayers every week.
I do. All right.
And I'll see you. I think I'll see you. Are you coming to the Elm Street Mission this Saturday?
I am, but I'm going to try and get down Wednesday night to bring some things. I work for a gentleman who does not like cheese sticks. Mm. He had his refrigerator is full of cheese sticks. So I got permission to bring them down. So I'm going to bring them down tomorrow night and drop them off for, and maybe I can help a little bit because my grandkids are on vacation. I won't be having the regular grandma day. And so I can do it.
Awesome.
Okay. See you there.
Thank you for taking time to make this video with me. God bless you. Thank
you.
You're welcome. All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.